Hello, everyone, and welcome to another very, very exciting expert interview in the Innovation and Creativity Summit 2017. Very proud to have Dr. Keith Sawyer with us. Dr. Sawyer is one of the academics on the forefront of creativity research. He's a professor at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and he's written many books on the subject, including Explaining Creativity, which has had multiple editions, and his most recent work is Zigzag, which helps people understand techniques to improve their creativity. Dr. Sawyer, it's wonderful having you.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
For people who aren't aware of your work or what you do and what you've researched, can you give them a brief background as to how you got interested in studying creativity?
I've been fascinated by creativity since a young age, and where I really focused was jazz ensembles, because I was a jazz pianist in high school and became fascinated by this improvisational nature of performance. When you're playing with a group and no one knows where it's going, no one knows what's going to come out of this improvisation, it has that unpredictable flowing character, and the creativity emerges from the members of the group interacting. That's really driven everything I've done in my research career, trying to understand those super creative groups, what makes them tick, what sort of actions and interactions happen in those groups, and then translating those findings to everyday groups in businesses and in our personal lives to help maximize their creativity.
And what sort of research do you do? Are you more on the neuroscience side, more on the cognitive psychology side? What's your specialty?
I use a qualitative methodology that I call interaction analysis, where it allows you to delve very deeply into the moment-by-moment interactional flow of a group. It involves transcribing the individual actions of the performers, the members of the group, then identifying how they tie together, how one flows from the previous one, and how the final product of the group emerges from that flow and sequence of interaction.
Lovely. And so if we want to actually start getting into some of the nitty-gritty, let's start at the most basic level for most people, one person being creative by themselves. What's your understanding about the things that make up an individual's ability to be creative?
I associate individual creativity with a process over time. It's never about a single solitary idea. A lot of my creativity colleagues, especially a few decades ago, would focus on the big flash of insight and then associate that with creativity. But all of our latest research suggests that it's really not about the idea. It's about small ideas. Yes, you have to have small ideas every day and every week. But what makes someone creative is the ability to tie those ideas together over time in a creative process. And successful creativity results from that process over time, where many small ideas are embedded. So individual creativity, it's about two things. It's about mastering that process, and it's about consistently having these small ideas that drive the process forward.
And are these conscious ideas what people would refer to as sort of convergent creativity, where you're picking at lots of little things to eventually build a bigger whole? Or is it what more people would refer to as divergent, where you have lots of small ideas happening subconsciously that then turn into this big idea?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. And the creative process, there's sometimes, we used to call it the bubble or the balloon, where you'd start out by having lots of ideas. That would be the divergent thinking phase, divergent meaning having a lot. And then the balloon would get smaller, and that would be the convergent creativity. I think today's research suggests that it's much more iterative, right? It's like what some people call today design thinking, where the process is flowing, but it's iterating in such a way that you go through these idea generation and then idea focusing every day, or maybe even many times in a day. And that's the nature of the process, that it's not linear. It doesn't start with divergent thinking and then end with converging, you know, 3 months later. It does that on it frequently and iteratively.
And then let's take it to the next level, which you described earlier. Group creativity, where you've got multiple people either building off each other's ideas or being in a state of flow, as some people would call it, very much related to the jazz music, jazz performance and improvisation that you mentioned. What's your research told you about how those work?
The nature of improvisational interaction, and I'd say all group interaction, is unpredictable, and I think of it as emergent. It's a bottom-up sort of creativity where the members of the group in interaction generate something collectively, where you might say the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And it's completely the opposite of top-down creativity, and top-down being, let's say, it's the leader of the group, or it's the visionary CEO of the company trying to have the creative insights and then distribute them through the company or through members of the group. I would say that never successfully generates innovation. It has to have this bottom-up emergent character. And you're more likely to get that when members of the group are interacting with each other in an improvisational flow where each member's action has a variety of possible paths from the prior member's action. And then each person's action is open enough so that the next person has a wide range of responses. It's that constant openness and flexibility that results in that moment-to-moment iteration that results in the emergence of something new and great.
So describe to us, if you could, the actual experiments you did on this subject to find out more. What was the aim of the experiments? How did you go about it? And what did you find at the end of it?
I would say I don't use an experimental methodology, which involves identifying a control group and an experimental group and then measuring some numeric statistical comparisons. I do a qualitative methodology which focuses on observation of naturally occurring interaction. So my belief is that when you go out into the world and you watch successful creative groups doing what they're doing in their natural setting, you're more likely to gain insights into what really goes on in successful groups and teams. So the observational methodology, I call it interaction analysis. It's very time consuming. To analyze my study of improvisational theater in Chicago, that was approximately a 5-year study. Because it involves such detail, videotaping the interaction, transcribing the moment-to-moment encounters, including things like the number of microseconds between turns of dialogue, or whether or not there's a half second of overlap between one person's sentence and the next person starting. Those very fine second-by-second distinctions tell us a lot about how groups get into a group flow state.
And what did you actually find by doing this analysis? Could you see trends emerging, or did you see differences between highly creative groups and groups that weren't as creative?
Absolutely. What you're more likely to find creativity in groups is where each individual takes actions that provide for openness and future possibilities so that the group collectively generates the creativity. What blocks group creativity is if any member of the group is too constraining or attempts to drive the group's flow. And improvisational theater groups, they sometimes call it writing the script in your head, which they're training you not to do, where you are taking an action where you assume that the subsequent flow of the group will go in a certain path. You're writing a script, and then the flow of the interaction happens in some different way, and it throws you off. You have to be responsive to the unpredictability, and then each of your actions, instead of driving the scene, which is another no-no in improv theater groups, instead of driving the scene to go in a particular direction, you take actions that allow for a wide range of possibilities to unfold after your turn. And all of these characteristics of individuals shift the creativity away from a person and shift the creativity toward the genius of the group.
Fascinating you say that, because there's such a variety of experts in the field and researchers in the field, and even within this summit, I've got certain people who talk about all the things you can do to enhance your individual creativity, and then you're telling us that what's actually more important is the group acting as a sort of collective, as you say, more than the sum of its parts, superorganism. But what does the research that you've done actually tell us about how everyday people can be more creative in these groups who might not necessarily be on a stage doing jazz or improvisation?
Absolutely. There are types of situations or problems where it's more appropriate to have a single individual working on that problem. In certain settings, you really need the group and the genius of the group to generate the solution to a problem. With individual creativity, in a sense, it has a similar improvisational flow because what I've identified from research on creativity, individual creativity, is that it's a process over time where each person, when they're being creative, consistently has small ideas and then is able to link those ideas together over time in a process so that that process consistently leads to successful creativity. It's a fascinating and empowering view of creativity because it rejects this notion that you have to wait for a brilliant flash of insight before you can start being creative. That's depends on people being lucky, and then when they don't have those insights, they can get very frustrated. What you want is you want a technique and a set of habits which consistently lead to creativity, and you're able to trust that process, even though it's unpredictable and you don't know where it's leading or what the outcome or when it will happen. You have to believe in that process and not wait for the brilliant flash of insight. In a way, it has the iterative characteristics of a group improvisation, where it has that same property of unpredictability, of small contribution to the process. When it's you alone, it's your own ideas. When it's a group, it's the ideas of each member of the group. But in both cases, it's a process over time where small ideas build together to generate something great.
And I understand that's something that you talk about in your book, Zigzag. And it's these techniques that people can actually use based on the scientific evidence that you've talked about. Without going into detail on every single technique that people can use, can you give us just a couple that people can start incorporating into their everyday lives and team workflow that you've seen actually improve their ability to be creative?
One of the most important ways to enhance your creativity is to wait for good questions and good problems to emerge from the process. It tends to block creativity if you start your process with a very clear definition of your problem and then try to identify a creative solution to the problem. The greatest and most breakthrough creativity comes when the problem emerges in a surprising way where you actually don't know how to ask the question yet. Creativity researchers, we call it problem finding. So you start engaging in the process, you have some intuition about where you need to go and what you need to do, but you're receptive to the way of formulating that problem, the type of question to ask, emerging from the process. Sometimes in Silicon Valley, you might refer to that as a pivot, where you are trying to solve one problem. You then realize from your customers or from your users that they really have a different problem they need to be solved and that you're asking the wrong question. If you're not receptive to the question emerging from the process, you're going to miss the big opportunity.
And then finally, taking this beyond just the groups who are trying to have these amazing ideas, what a lot of people feel frustrated by is that they're in a company or organization that says that creativity is important, but is actually unknowingly preventing them being creative. What have you found are these hidden blockages to creativity that companies don't realize that they're doing, but are actually really harming them?
I started creativity research focusing on individuals and groups, and then the more time I spent consulting and speaking to organizations and doing workshops, the more times I did that, the more I realized that so much of creativity is not really about the individual. You know, companies can say they want more creativity. They might even send their employees to workshops to help them have better ideas. But if the organization isn't aligned with creative practices, then it really doesn't matter how creative the people you hire are on some test, for example. Organizations have to get several characteristics in place. First of all, they have to have incentives in place that incentivize creativity and, in particular, incentivize collaboration among members of the group. One way to block that is to give individuals rewards for their own creativity If you do that, it results in a kind of possessiveness and self-interest that blocks collaboration. So the incentives really do have to be right. Leadership is absolutely important. We depend on the leaders to establish the culture of the organization, which, for example, should be a culture where great risks are expected. And if people don't think big and occasionally fail, that they don't get the same respect. And, you know, the person who is safe and has consistent wins, but they're very small, some companies give that person more value and bigger incentives than the person who does something wild and crazy and is never successful. I've seen innovative organizations where if you take the safe bets, even if what you do generates revenue for the company, you still don't get the same big incentives and you don't get valued by the organization as much as someone who is consistently thinking big.
Have you got any examples of that? Because incentivization is one of these very tricky things to talk about, and it's going to vary by company and by country. But have you found maybe one example of a really bad way to incentivize creativity, and then one way to a really good way that's worked for someone you've consulted with?
All right. Well, I'll talk about a company that does it really well, and then if you invert that, you can get some of the bad ways, which maybe some of our viewers are in companies like that right now. My favorite example is W.L. Gore and Associates. That's G-O-R-E. They're based in the countryside in Delaware. They're nowhere near Silicon Valley or California. I like to use this example because a lot of executives I talk to, they think, yeah, we're not in Silicon Valley. Those guys, you know, it's something in the water there. But here we are in the Midwest, and we just can't be that way. So I like using the example of a manufacturer that's in somewhere really uncool, right, outside of Wilmington, Delaware. This company is incredibly creative, consistently innovating with new products, and they have all of these characteristics aligned. They have a culture that not only tolerates risk but expects it. They have incentives in place which are not focused on the individual but are distributed throughout the organization. They have a set of processes in place where creative ideas emerge from the bottom up as opposed to from the top down. And to give you an example, if you have a stage gate sort of methodology where you're waiting for those big ideas and then some executive or some executive group picks the ideas that are going to move forward, and then at every gate in the process you have another group that's picking which one to move forward, that's top down because the selection at each stage are done from the top. It's the bottom-up process that results in great creativity. W.L. Gore has mastered that process, and it's almost like an anti-process, right? Because it has this flow which is iterative and unpredictable. It's difficult to get it right, and very few organizations can do it. It takes a long time, if you're not there, for the leaders to get the culture in place, to get the nature of the process understood throughout the organization, and then having the incentives and the leadership aligned with a creative process that is unpredictable, iterative, and bottom-up.
Dr. Sawyer, it's been wonderful speaking with you so far. We're coming up to the end of the session, but what I like to ask all the experts is, based on your experience and your understanding of the science and the research, have you got one tip, one actionable insight that the viewers and listeners can go out and try out either this afternoon or this week to improve their ability to be creative?
I think you should consciously introduce change into your routine, including making an effort to meet the sort of people that you normally would not encounter. This is one of the most important findings of creativity research, is that you're more likely to have interesting and creative ideas if you have what we call distant combinations, where you're combining very different conceptual material or ideas or experiences together in your mind. That combination ability is a basic human cognitive ability. Most of us have our minds filled with very closely related information. We're focused on a job. We're focused on our disciplinary expertise. So to get those distant combinations, you really have to make a conscious effort. Go outside your everyday routine. Make a point of noticing things throughout the day that you might not otherwise notice. I've got several techniques that are focused on that in my book, Zigzag. And one of them is to make an effort to meet the sorts of people that you would not meet in your day-to-day workplace. You're going for a broad range of material, broad range of people and perspectives and concepts and ideas. And that, I think, is the first step to greater creativity.
Perfect. I do recommend everyone have a look at the book, because it is just so much insight as to actionable things you can try out. For everyone who wants to find out more about you and the work that you can do, where should they go to find out more?
Take a look at my website. That's keithsawyer.com, where you'll find information about my books and my research and various other activities I've been performing in this wonderful career of studying creativity.
Perfect. It's been absolutely wonderful having you, and I look forward to speaking again with you soon.
Well, great. Thank you very much.
Congratulations on being part of the Innovation and Creativity Summit. I'm sure that if you continue to watch the other expert interviews, you will experience an improvement in your capability to turn your ideas into something valuable. But don't forget, to get the very best experience and ensure you don't miss any of the priceless lessons, you should invest in yourself with the All Access Pass. Not only will this give you exclusive lifetime access to watch all the lessons whenever is best for you, you will also get all the interviews as downloadable audio files so you can learn on the go, full transcripts so you can read and analyze the great advice and tips, and exclusive bonuses not available to anyone else. Click the link below to get your All Access Pass now.